This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Welcome, kia ora te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. It is wonderful to have you out there with us this evening. We are a show that explores the ideas behind our way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. Thank you for joining us from around the motu this evening and even the world. I hear a little rumour there are people out there in other parts of the world listening, so it is wonderful to have you listeners out there. Now, I've got a couple of friends here tonight from the Aotearoa New Zealand Fellowship. My son was talking to me about the name of New Zealand, and we were discussing Aotearoa the other day, and so I thought, yeah, it's about time I include that. Now, hang on a moment. Welcome, Sue. How are you?
Oh, great. Good to be here.
Yeah?
Thank you, yeah.
It's wonderful to have you here. And we've got another friend here too. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm great, thanks, Jen. Excited, a bit nervous, but yeah, happy to be out of that cold wind.
Oh my God, so he's got a radio voice. That's like the when we had Simon in here too. Jeez, what is going on with that? It's wonderful to have you both here tonight. I trust that you dressed up warm today and, oh, it's chilly in the winter down here at the moment. Now, Alcoholics Anonymous, folks, it is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics in recovery. So we do the mahi together through the 12-step program. And a little fact finding that I had, this program has actually been around since 1935. One alcoholic, a stockbroker, one of them was, the other was a doctor. They got together and this is what they started, Alcoholics Anonymous. We are incredibly grateful to them. And as time went on, more people joined them and together they extended the program to the 12 steps and 12 traditions that we know and do today. Now, did you guys know that when they first did it, they only created, I think it was 6 or 7 steps? Did you know that?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I'm going to say I didn't.
Well, good on you. Well, see, there you go. We've hit one listener already. There are over 2 million people in the fellowship around the world, and that always blows my mind. I think that it's quite stunning that we should have such a large fellowship that was based purely on people helping. Like, it's not like we join a club. We don't pay fees. We don't have a huge governing board and CEO and COO and all those kind of things. It's just a bunch of alcoholics helping other alcoholics. I think that's quite incredible to have so many people join it. It really is a well-oiled machine. Anyway, let's start with the preamble. Can you do that for us today, Sue? And I'll, hello. Sue did it last time. Can you do that for us
Pete's
today,
Pete's going to do
Pete?
That today, yeah. Sure, Jen. Thanks. I'm Pete. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help each other to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Lovely. Thank you. Well done. Now, I'd just like to say what you hear tonight, folks, that it's our opinions. It's not the opinions of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So, it's just 3 people getting together having a chat. Now, we're going to kick on to the daily reflection. Now, Sue's definitely going to do that.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sue, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, I'm going to read the daily reflections, and it's a little book that comes along as part of the literature, and it's called A Book of Reflections by AA Members for AA Members. And just looking here, it's published, first published in 1990. So that's pretty cool. So I'm going to read from July the 23rd, and it's titled, I Ask God to Decide. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And that's from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 76. And the reading goes, having admitted my powerlessness and made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him, I don't decide which defects get removed or the order in which defects get removed or the time frame in which they get removed. I ask God to decide which defects stand in the way of my usefulness to him and to others, and then I humbly ask him to remove them.
That's nice. I like that reading. Tell me one thing that stood out to me there, and I often think about it. When you walked into the room, so when you first walked in, did the God thing jump out at you? Was that a thing for you, or is it?
Yeah, I have to say yes initially. Not this time into the room. It's my first time a few years ago when I went along with a really generous friend. You know, I was terrified. I went in and saw the banners up there, and I immediately sort of just used that as a first primary block. I think I was blocking a few things, but just was resisting, I think, even the idea of having to go to AA. So that was a good manoeuvre right there. So, but as I, this time in the rooms, is I had a much more sort of better and I asked understanding of what that would mean, and I asked around about that. And then you learn to listen about what's happening, what that really means when you stick around and go to a few meetings. And so I could transfer that into a God of my understanding or like your higher power. So that was, yeah, that was a kind of a game changer for me, understanding that it's not necessarily a religious sort of concept, which I personally was struggling with in terms of proceeding with the AA program, but it could be something else entirely. So that was really great.
Yeah, I do find sometimes when I'm talking to somebody, because I have that understanding as well, that God is my higher power, but it's not necessarily a religious God as such. And it's quite, I find it quite challenging sometimes to explain that to somebody who isn't in the rooms, especially when it comes to family members and friends and so forth, because people out there hear all of this, oh, it's a religious program, blah, 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 and having to explain it's a spiritual program. And it's, yeah, it's quite difficult. What about you, Pete?
I think you just nailed it, Jan, that it's a spiritual program, not a religious program. You know, if you look around the world, people will tell you that religion's the source of all, you know, or a lot of the problems. So, you know, I haven't had a problem with the God thing. I've had a faith on and off throughout my life, and I guess the thing that I focus on is that even though I've forgotten God and lost faith in him, he's never given up on me, and he's always been there when I've needed him. So when I walked into the rooms, I was at a point where I was willing to listen to and do anything to stay sober. So I didn't actually put a lot of focus onto it in the early days, but the longer I've been in the program, the more involved I've become, the more important the God thing has become to me. And you know, I start every day now with the daily reflection. It's my little mini Bible, and I find that it's either speaking directly to me, or, you know, as we work through the year, and because I'm still early in my recovery, I accept that if I don't get the meaning from the reading today, then I'll get it next time around, because it's just that I'm not ready to hear that message yet. So, yeah, that's my take on it. Yeah, I don't have a problem with the God thing. I understand that people do. And I also understand that a lot of that's to do with religion and not spirituality. So,
yeah. And that reading also was talking about our shortcomings, our defects of character, which I've actually found through my time, that side of it, that there are things that get worked on slowly. It's certainly been a process. It hasn't been something where I have all of a sudden had all my defects of character removed. And even last week I learnt another, I had another big whopper. I thought, oh, thanks, HP, you know. Mm. But, yeah, it's a wonder. Well, I found it wonderful to discover those things about myself and actually stop and take a look at myself as well. I don't know about you guys,
it's a little bit to unpack, that defects of character. It's like, oh, am I defective? You know, what's wrong with me? Am I sort of, you know, got dents in me? And as is
rusty
bits. That kind of can move into, if you're stepping, I guess it's more around step four, which you kind of settle into as you sort of start to come to more meetings and start proceeding up from 1, 2, 3, 4. But it's, for me, it was just identifying, how did I get to this place? Who am I? You know, what people have I been involved with? What instances? What am I? What tricks have I? Not tricks have I played. That's the wrong thing to say. Actually, it's And I'm a bit older than I'm in my sort of mid 50s. So
same.
There's been different cycles of where I've lived, what I've got up to, and they're not all bad. It's just more identifying what are the patterns, you know, and who's been involved. What are the reoccurring patterns you've been up to?
Yeah.
And you sort of work those out, and then you work out sort of what with your sponsor and with yourself mostly is like, you know, what do you want to change? You know, what do you want to leave behind? And what are you going to surrender?
Yeah. That's so true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what, it's all about growth. I mean, the 12 steps is all about growth, personal growth, hugely. And, identifying those things that you'd like to change, I think, and ones that you realise are assets within yourself and strengths. Because I don't know about you guys, but when I walked in, I didn't think I was anything very good. Like, I didn't think that I really had any strengths. I didn't think, I just thought I was pointless for this world. So it's been a lovely discovery to find both things and recognize them and choose. Yeah. What about you, Pete?
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah, just, I've got my pen there and I was busy listening because I was enthralled with that and I didn't make any notes. And of course, now my mind's gone blank again.
It's not fair, is it?
It's not fair.
That's all part of recovery too.
But, it can't be my age because I'm about the same age as.
we're all the same, and it's like
post midlife crisis or kind of mini crisis.
Oh no, let's not go down that road.
But yeah, I mean, everyone's so different at AA, and that's what's so amazing.
Mm, absolutely,
like we've all got really different traits and characters and those types of things. I'm just thinking that even I'm just going to jump back a bit like that, the higher power situation. If there's 2 million people in the AA program, that means there's like 2 million versions of what you consider
a higher power.
That power that's not you, essentially.
Yeah. Power greater than yourself. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? So, I mean, I know how I started out with mine and the respect grew and grew and grew and I discovered actually the word God was my definition. It wasn't, because we do have a definition in our heads due to media, our past lives, our experiences in life with churches, family, people around us and wars, I think you were sort of implying there earlier on, Pete. But, lots of things can come into your mind straight away without actually realising you've already got a definition. Does that make sense? Like, I already had
does,
a thought.
Yes. Your preconceived ideas, you think of, it's not something we're going to talk about on the list, but, you think of, I struggled to admit that I was an alcoholic because I didn't sit on park benches in a dirty old raincoat, and which is what my brain had told me that's what we did. The reality is so far removed from that, the people I've met are just incredible people. They just have an illness, have a disease. And that was something that I discovered that set me free, because, you know, I'd spent years going to counsellors and all sorts of health professionals trying to work out what was wrong with me. And then I found out that I was sick, and it was like, oh, thank God for that.
It was a relief. I had the same relief.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm not a bad person. I'm just, I'm unwell. And so that was part of, you know, accepting that was in a way, it was shedding a layer, and it was starting the process of lifting things up to that higher power, so that you know, and the beginning of the removal of the defects, you know. And I don't know if he's got time for you guys when he's busy removing all mine. So
he's trying to be selfish.
You know, he is, you know, our higher power is very busy, very busy.
Yeah, I have to agree. Right, we're going to go and have a little listen to this.
You're listening to AA Live on ORFM Dunedin.
Now I'm going to play a song. I've done a little bit of something different. You know how I do out there, listeners. And I have put in a CD, and I have just pressed a number at random. I can only tell you that we have got a bit of Tina Turner coming up, and I hope you enjoy.
I can't stand the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories. I can't stand the rain against my window, 'cause he ain't here with me. Hey, window pane, tell me, do you remember how sweet it used to be? Yeah, I know you got some sweet memories, but it's a one-sided.
Tina. I actually went and saw her live in Wellington, and Sue, you're nodding, you saw her too. Oh gosh, she was great. And she had this extended piece of platform that she stood on, and she came out over the top of us. And she had on one of those tiny little silver dresses that she does, and she's got the best legs. I was so envious. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was when there were saxophones as well, you know, and she had that saxophone player that used to come out and do all of that. Yeah, anyway, Tina, she's a bit of a – she's not just about Mad Max to me. She's Tina. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about step one with you both, you know, which for you listeners, step one is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. Now, for me, I have to say it took me a long time to realize this. You know, started drinking at 14, came into the rooms at 49. I was told at 25, Jan, you're an alcoholic. And I said, yep, that's great. I don't know what that means, but I can manage it. Well, yeah, there goes the house, there goes the marriage, there goes the lots of different career paths and so forth. Many times through there, though, I did try and stop, but I kept picking back up. And yeah, I didn't know the concept of not picking up that first drink. For me, discovering that that was something I could do was much easier to manage in my head than saying, I want that drink. All I had to say to myself was, oh, just don't pick up that first drink. But in saying that, it hasn't been an easy journey. Mm. It's been some pretty hard roads. How was your discovery of your unmanageability, Pete? What did you find for yourself?
I've got to say we've got a pretty similar timeline, except I got through to 56 before I accepted that I had a problem. I'd been told, and yeah, I've shared this before in meetings, that when we were 18, 19, I remember sitting outside in the sun with, there was about five of us, and there was a little handout that you used to get in the pubs or the bottle shops or whatever, and it was a little questionnaire, and it was like, if you have more than 5, 6, or 8 or whatever it was of these things, you're an alcoholic. Well, we all scored 18 out of 20 and just thought it was funny, because we all drank the same. And, of those five people, one's dead, one's normal, and three of us are alcoholics. So, you know, it wasn't so much of a laughing matter as we thought. But, you know, I tried giving up a couple of times. I had limited success. You know, I once got through to, and I remember this because, you know, I was just counting every day, you know, and I know now that I was a dry drunk. I got to 155 days, and then it was Christmas time, and I thought, I'll just have one. So there you go.
One takes you to 1,000, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, as they say, you know, one's too many and 1,000's not enough, or whatever that saying is.
That is it.
Yeah. And that was the beginning of the end. And within, you know, it's written out in all, in the steps and in the big book and everywhere, you know, in 3 months I was worse than ever. Got to a point where I crossed a line. I did something that I, or threatened something to someone that I thought I would never do. And that was it. I don't know what that was. It was around Christmas, New Year. So, the first Saturday meeting, the first available meeting was a Saturday night, and I went to that. And, that was the first time that I admitted that I was an alcoholic. And I wouldn't, you know, said it out loud. And I probably, the first time that I admitted it to myself too.
Did you feel safe enough to do that? And was it because of the environment in which you were?
The environment there, I walked in there and everyone was welcoming. Like, there's a guy, and I know he's been on the show because I heard him on one of the podcasts I was listening to. Ben asked me, you know, he says, oh, are you looking for a meeting? Because I was lost. I had no idea where I was going. And he took me into the meeting and sat me down and introduced me to a couple of people, and I got a couple of phone numbers, and I listened to the sharing. And I guess I was lucky in the fact that I heard the similarities right away, and that put me at ease. So I just kind of, fell into that. I've said before, like I went into the rooms trying to find people that would accept me for the way I was, and then discovered that I didn't want to be the way I was.
You wanted a sense of belonging, but little did you know you'd be a sense of belonging with a bunch of alcoholics.
Exactly. Mm. So I found the people I needed, but not in the way that I thought that I needed them. So, and I just felt so welcomed, I just felt at peace there. I didn't have to hide anymore. And the miracle for me is that from very early, whether it was the first meeting, the second meeting, the desire to drink was taken from me. And I know not everyone gets that. So I didn't have, long-term cravings and anxieties and things. And, I'm going on a bit, I'll let Sue share, but, I did have my first alcohol dream was just, I woke up and I thought that I'd actually had a drink about 3 months in. And I was beside myself. I was devastated because I thought, I've got to start all over again. And I was so mad.
Yeah. Your story is very familiar. I too am one of the lucky souls that has had an understanding of it straight away and realized it was such a relief to discover it was a disease and I wasn't going Absolutely. Crazy. And there were all these lovely people in the room and I was like, wow, where have you all been? I finally felt like I belonged. I describe it as feeling like I had a hug from the chair.
Yeah, a lot of them were in the same place as me because, I did 90% of my drinking at home alone.
That's right.
Which is, fairly common, but, when you think, when we were young, we all go, oh, yeah, I used to drink because it made me smarter and funnier and more relaxed and, I could be with people. But in the end, it just completely isolated me from everyone, even those living in my own house.
Yeah, it's a progressive illness, that's for sure. What about you, Sue? What did you find? Because you came in once before, hadn't you?
Yeah. So that was maybe 5 years or 4 years prior to that. But like you, Jan, like I would have started drinking with the time I was about 14, I think. Surf life saving. Wow.
That's what
go
you did.
Go out, learn all those things, and then in the evenings, the little bar was open and things like that. But, I think the way my relationship to alcohol or drinking was not dissimilar to a lot of people, right up until probably my 20s or 30s. But it was still always heavy, and it was also related to creativity for me. Like I used to think, oh, great, I know what I'm doing and I'll take my work home and I'll keep going, making that sort of
extra
work.
It gave you the
work.
Freedom.
And I thought, I needed that to be creative or have great ideas in my job, what I love doing. And then everything was like a reward system, like you'd have a great day in the garden or you'd help people out and then you'd drink. So that was okay. But if you sort of take that into my 40s and then things really changed, it really changed and I sort of increased my level of intake. I changed that into much harder things and it really accelerated and a little bit like Pete, my life was really changing. I felt like I didn't have control, I now know, over certain parts of my life, especially my employment, some situations. And so I was a recluse and that was fantastic. So no one could watch me, no one could see me, those types of things. And then for a really wonderful period of time, I had a partner And so that would slow that down. So it became more manageable again.
Yeah.
But then that changed again as the stresses increased. So this a huge seesaw, but this time it was like a tsunami. And then it really just whopped me in the head. And so when I did go into the rooms again and the final time, I was just ready to go. You know, I was just like, I'd been in CADS before, and so I kind of knew the system of sitting in a circle, you know, having your turn, getting picked for sharing, being terrified, all those types of things. I was nervous, and I was really upset because it's just so much, you know, at the end towards it, I was in tears and because you're kind of knackered, you know, you're exhausted.
Exhaustion.
From this life of having to find it, keep it, pay for it.
Hide it.
Recycle it.
Oh, yeah, trying to look normal. What is normal? But
yeah.
And the isolation.
And so, yeah, I was ready to go, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sick of myself.
Yeah, that hiding it and thinking that you're getting away with it is madness, you know? What you were just sharing, Sue, just brought some other thoughts up, you know, because my previous attempts at giving up, I was doing that for somebody else, but this last time when I went into the rooms, I think the main reason that that it's been successful and that I continue to grow and to be sober, and I mean in my body and my being, you know, I said before I was like a dry drunk, but now I feel like I'm sober because I don't have that desire to drink. But this is because it's my decision now this time around. I'm doing this for me. And if that's selfish, and you know, great, I don't care as long as I'm sober, you know, and it's a different sort of selfishness than everything I've done in the past. I don't know if, does that make sense?
Absolutely does, because it is what they say, it can be a selfish program, but actually the end result and the person that you become is such a win. So it's, it definitely has two sides in that. And we realise the difference in the type of selfishness. So even our drinking was incredibly selfish because it took ourselves away from people. It took people down roads that they didn't want to go. And yeah, I was one of those people that said, geez, I'm not selfish. I give you the shirt off my back if you were in my heart, you know. But turns out I always had a condition and I never spotted that condition before. As long as you do this, as this happens for me. But I never realized that was a selfish thing. It's been a wonderful learning, that one.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of what you're saying about that, you know, until, you know, I started work at stupid o'clock, so I was finished by midday and I'd go home and have a bit of a nap and then I'd get up and I'd do all the stuff with the kids, the after school, the sports and all that. And I love that, you know, I love sports. I love hanging out with them and doing that. But once it hit 5 o'clock and it was time for a drink, after that it was just like, don't ask me to do anything else, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, that's me. That's me.
That's my time.
Leave me alone.
You're lucky that you waited till 5 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, I'm impressed that you waited till 5.
That was one of the things that I was tricking myself, that I'm not alcoholic because I don't, you know.
Because you wait.
I can wait. I can put it off. And the weird thing was that if something disrupted that routine, I could be, you know, I'd be dirty about it. But if I got through to about 7 o'clock, then I could go the whole night without a drink. And it was so, you know, part of the program, one of the things I had to do in early sobriety was to disrupt that routine and avoid those triggers.
Yeah, we do. We create our own patterns. I think you've both shared those patterns that I can fully recognise. And it's a bit like you say, we're looking for the similarities, not the differences. And all three, what I've listened to today, we've all got similarities.
And one thing in terms of, I think we were talking earlier about, or before we came into this recording, that like this idea of the craving of when you first decided that you're not going to drink or you have to stop drinking or removal of alcohol, and that phenomena of craving. And that for sure, that can be really true because your routine, you're used to having it every day, you know, maybe for breakfast, these types of things, having it during the day. So I took it quite super seriously. I went in, also when I went into AA, I went and saw my doctor and I said, you know, and they were like, okay, you've got, and I've revealed, I just moved back down to Dunedin. Mm-hmm. And so got the records brought down and there was, you know, how you can go online now and you can see your medical and it's like, there's this pattern that's coming through. But it was really good to be upfront with you. And if you can, I'm not saying this is my point because I took it so seriously and then I got support through there. They took my, like, things like blood tests to see where we were. If I wanted to, I could have a managed sort of like support But I'd, so they had it was almost like a free therapy session for like four sessions as well. So you could go along every 2 weeks and they'll check in with you, how you're getting on, what's happening, how can we help you? So, and then I was starting to go to AA as well. So I felt like I had like crutches, you know, I could sort of get through that first things. And another one, which I think is quite cute, but it's just like what I had in my kitchen at home. I had a post-it note for every day that I would have a sober day, and I'd have day one, day six, and I'd write like 3 points of what I'd seen that day or something like that. And gradually along the wall, just super gradually, it turned into 10 post-it notes and it turned into 12. Mm. And then it turned into 16 and then 20 and then like 30, and then it was just like, I've got this.
Is
and
your I'd, house one big post-it note now?
No, when I do. And everyone thinks I'm nuts. But I don't care, I've kept those post-it notes.
Oh, I think it's a great idea.
No, I think that's great.
And then sometimes I'd go to bed, I'm like, oh, damn, I've got to get back up and put the post-it note on the bloody wall. And then, and I was really proud of myself because I could see it appearing. And then, sure, yes. Day 240, I was like, ugh. You know, it wasn't. I didn't want to go and drink, but I was like, "Where I want to get to this year," you know. But
it can't. And you got there.
Yeah.
I mean, so it wasn't that them. Long ago.
I reckon it's great. It's a visual thing, and you know, I check. My first year, I every day, every month was a celebration. I hit the first year, and it was weird because it was like on a Thursday, so I didn't have a meeting until Saturday. So I was really excited, but nobody knew why. And then it wasn't till the Saturday night at my home group that it really felt real, you know. And it was just like, yeah, having a birthday that nobody remembered.
Sue's just pulled out her one-year coin.
Out one, which is awesome.
One-year token. And it's like, yeah, it's in her pocket. There's pride.
I happen to know that today is my 555th day. So it's all the fives. So, and that just
genius.
Popped up. Yeah. So.
You got to love and, that.
Yeah, it's just some of those little wins, little, you know, numerical quirks or whatever it is. Whatever it is that takes to keep you going. And I think the post-it notes is just a great
idea.
It's
a genius idea.
Because every day you're filling in a space and you can, it's so easy to monitor. It's in your face. It's a brilliant idea, yeah.
I love it. Hey, you are listening to the AA Live Radio Show in association with our friends on Otago Access Radio. That's on 105.4 FM. We're going to put in another tune. We've just once again throwing in a number, let's see what comes up, and we don't know.
My brightest stars, my inner light, let it guide me, experience and innocence. Inside me, the listener's chance can open me or untie me. I drift in a space free of time. I find the highest states of grace in my mind.
I was just mentioning that CD, I used to play that on a summer's afternoon, and it would be the start of a good night coming with a few Ratley ice cubes in the glass. How different it is now. I'm glad I don't do that. I'm actually glad. Now, we were talking about cravings just before. So you mentioned cravings, and for me, you know, the discovery of the phenomenon. Okay, who's going to say it for me?
Phenomenon.
Thank you. Of craving. it's a word I've never been able to get. Oh, no.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
No,
I didn't understand that.
Radio
belief.
World's going to be singing along now and not listening.
Oh, you know what you've done. You've started that little thing. The rest of the day they're going to have.
There's a little earworm in there.
Yeah, is that what they call it?
So for those of it who listen to it at night time, I'm very sorry.
Yeah, when you put your head on the pillow, that's what you're going to hear. That's terrible. Anyway, craving. I didn't have any idea that when I picked up that first drink or the second drink that there was something chemical in my body, something my body would go, ooh, must have more, must have more. Not once did I recognise that for all those years of drinking. And then when I sort of, it was a revelation for me. Like, that's sort of where that don't pick up that first drink came into me. And I just had that click and understanding for me. What about you guys? Did you think to yourselves, did you have an understanding of that craving?
Do you mean while you were drinking or using?
Yeah, for once you had the first thing or the second drink.
Yeah,
and
but
then
by the time
it says
towards
more,
the end
more.
Of my sort of addiction was I had it all sorted, you know. I would buy bulk, not bulk, but, you know, I would have enough.
Well,
you know
that's
what I mean?
It.
Like, so I could always just top up and then I'd Yeah, I mean, I think I might have shared this last time, but, you know, look at my maps or Google Maps in the morning, like, you know, what opens at 9 o'clock or what opens at 10? Damn, that, like at 9 o'clock, and then I'd have a whole routine sorted.
But that's,
you know,
just
I knew that I could circulate.
Our management of that.
Our management of acquiring alcohol and then disposing of everything as well.
But
and just everything was crafted around that. So the cravings were minimized. But sure, if you'd definitely know about it if that wasn't so much. Like if I hadn't planned that, then that would be quite tricky for me.
And one of the other ways to look at it was the fact that when you had that first drink, your body was instantly going to react to want more. I didn't recognize that in myself. I was like you, so I was, oh, well, I'm ready for it. But I didn't realize that it was my body going craving. I just
thought I wanted more. Well, I knew it was, so that's why I didn't have to go through that. I didn't have to go through the withdrawals or the DTs. Or
my mouth used to water in the afternoon waiting for the time.
Like, oh, yeah, sometimes that that 5 o'clock, just waiting for that was torture. And sometimes, oh, God, I remember, you know, when the kids had a late game down at the Edgar Centre and shooting off down to Countdown and buying a bottle and just having a couple of swigs in the car park and then going back in just to
survive,
knock that. And I'd forgotten about that in terms of craving. I'm sitting here thinking that you know, when I was trying to cut back, when I was trying to do this thing, give up this drinking thing for other people, that, you know, and that was madness. That craving was dreadful. And, you know, Pete trying to restrict his drinking or limit, you know, was just a horrible, angry mess. So, you know, I recognise that now, that craving now. But, you know, that was without the program. And now that I've embraced the you know, Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and working through those, and that desire has been miraculously lifted from me, I don't get that craving. I think I started sharing about that the dream, you know, the first time I had that dream. And it's so vivid. Like, I just done a hard day of work. My best friend and I had been crutching lambs or something, and he just walked in and opened the fridge and threw a beer at me, and I just cracked it and drank it, you know, as you do. And I just woke up and I was absolutely petrified and terrified, and I thought I'd absolutely blown it and just ruined everything that I'd been working on for the last 3 months. And then I woke up and it was a dream. And it took me the whole day to get over that.
Drinking dreams are great.
Drinking dreams,
they're a
yeah.
great part of your recovery yeah. if you're having them. I've had somebody say to me before, oh, I was told if I have drinking dreams, it's a bad thing. I'm craving the drink. And I said, no, it's a great thing. You're learning. You're learning. That is where you don't want to go, you know, so that good fear.
But yeah, and then looking at step one, and I might do that every morning or on a regular basis, like when I'm walking to work or having a really big think about how my day's going to roll, what I'm going to think, you know, how is it going to be planned, what can I offer, or what I'm going to get up to today. But then I also understand too now that you can almost break that step one into two parts. You know, you're powerless over alcohol and our lives are becoming unmanageable. So, sure, alcoholics, we're not really making choices anymore, are you? But your use of alcohol is getting you into trouble. You know, that's a big one, whether it's personally, whether it's criminally, whether it's your family, whether it's your job. But then there's the other part, that your life's unmanageable. And for me, it was through heavy using over many, many years. There was just so many decisions not being made. There was jobs being lost. And it wasn't when I was like under influence. It was just being this, my patterning, the way I was living my life. And that's the unmanageability for me. So that's how I'd interpret that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just good. We all have our own interpretations. It's a bit like we were talking at the beginning about our higher powers and that spiritual side of things that you said. So there's, you know, over 2 million people, higher powers out there, and how we interpret our whole sense of recovery is different. You see people in different parts of the journey.
Yeah, I remember hearing on our Tuesday night meeting, the online one, and there was a guy from LA, I think, who had been in the program for 52 years. And he said, just the shortest little word, he said, yet. And that stuck with me because, you know, I've stopped drinking before I got to, I didn't lose any jobs or, you know, relationships gone, you know, still got the house and everything. But it's a yet, you know, how I didn't crash my car, get done for drink driving, or, you know, they were just daily occurrences. You know, grace of God. The yet, I got out of it before the yet got me. And that's just, that was a powerful message.
Yeah, it is a powerful message. The yets. Hey, guys, I'd just like to say to our listeners tonight, look, there are no membership fees to join AA. All you need is a want to give up drinking. So you might be in that place of desperation where everything you've tried isn't working. Honestly, Alcoholics Anonymous, it is a program of miracles. Well, it has been for myself. Come in, listen to the similarities and start the journey. Don't listen to the differences. That's one of my big learnings through here. I'd like to thank you for spending the evening with us and remind you all of that. If you want to drink, that is your business. If you want to stop, then Alcoholics Anonymous might work for you. If you'd like to jump on to our website and find out meetings, we have them in person, we have them online. The options are endless, lunchtime, daytime, mornings, evenings, there's all sorts. Jump on to aa.org.nz. Also, we have a wonderful telephone system where we're answering the phones. So if you call 0800 AA Works, that's 0800 229 6757, you'll get one of us. Ask about where you are, wherever in the country, New Zealand that is, and they can tell you about meetings. They can help you get to a meeting, maybe. You know, the options are endless. I have to say, I have met some of the nicest and kindest people ever in my life in these rooms, and they just want the best for you. And for those that are out there even thinking you've been in before and you're not sure if you should come back in, please do come back in. I have not seen one person say, "You're a loser. How come you went out and picked up?" Not once. Every time someone has come back into the rooms, it's been hugs, and people are so grateful to see you and thankful to see you. It really is an amazing program. And I'd like to thank you both for coming in and spending the evening with us this evening. Thanks, Jen. Listeners have had a great night.
Yeah, welcome. It's been cool.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And we're going to finish with another song. I've put a bit of Santana in there, so let's see what comes up. And until next time, take care of yourselves out there. Mate wā.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.